Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello!
Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy! That's an original phrase I just made up. It's mine. I invented that.
The yawn ahoy. And never yawning, always alert, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
I'm sorry, that's way too close to my unique individual intellectual property called Mahoy. It's yawning greetings in general, I feel like, are my territory, and I'm not comfortable with let me register what's crappin'in.org.
Okay,
got it.
Hi everybody.
Wow. So last week we talked about that SpaceX was going to have an announcement later in the day.
Yeah, we did it, Andrew. We covered that. We covered the SpaceX. What is it going to be? No more news about SpaceX or something?
Well, we said there was going to be an announcement.
Yeah, we made the announcement.
We covered the fact that there's going to be an announcement. We covered that news.
And then the announcement never came. Yeah.
Carry on. Glad we covered that, everybody. Moving right along, I got a story about snakes.
It's snakes! Oh, wait.
So there was a press conference, SpaceX, and Elon Musk, in his usual extremely smooth, well-polished fashion, came out on stage and talked about the plans for who the first person is to... who's commissioned their next rocket, the BFR, which stands for Big Falcon Rocket. There's another possible interpretation of that acronym. Who the first passenger was, which is Yusaka Maezawa, MZ as he likes to be called, who's a Japanese startup billionaire. And he was kind of, I would say he was the odds-on favorite for who it was going to be. He was, I'd seen his name come up a number of times as far as somebody who they thought was going to be it, because he'd been at SpaceX events, he'd done press conferences where he had our interviews where there was a Falcon Heavy model sitting in the back, which he was the original person who booked the Falcon Heavy originally to use to go over the trip around the moon. And they said, oh, we're going to change that to the Big Falcon Rocket as we focus our efforts on that. So what was interesting was Elon provided some more details, a little bit more about the model changed, the design of it's changed, but they're making progress. They showed the first piece of one of the test rockets, which is a giant, humongous, graphite carbon composite cylinder. And then MZ came out and unveiled his whole plan. And, I was expecting hey, I'm some dude and I got money and I'm going to go around the moon because that would be cool. And he'd be like, all right, that's cool, dude. But no, he said, hey, I want to go around the moon, but I want to go around alone and I want to bring some people with me. And he announced that the plan was that he was going to go to the moon and he's going to bring six or eight people with him, and he's going to bring artists. He wants to bring artists, filmmakers, musicians, sculptors, writers, whatever. He wants to bring a group of and understand when he says he wants to bring artists with him, he started off by saying he would have loved to have brought Andy Warhol and Michael Jackson and Basquiat with him. So that's the caliber he's looking for. So if you're thinking about writing the letter right now, I'd build up my resume first.
Or what if we start an orchestrated campaign to get him to lower his expectations, specifically to the level of three podcasters who talk about weird things?
Yeah, let's say the official settle for us MZ campaign.
Why not us?
Why not? You know what, though, for this type of endeavor, if there's not likely there's a huge technological benefit in that it's a proof of concept that they can go to the moon, and obviously SpaceX will derive a bunch of benefit from having done this. I don't know how much hard science data needs to come out of another mission to the moon. Especially if it's just going to lap around it and then come on back. Why not? Why not a bunch of artists? I mean, this is quite literally the single best, most exclusive party in the history of humanity that somebody's throwing. And and I think it'll have substantial, important benefits to the storytelling and the inspiration of, you know, the people who tell stories to the rest of the humans back on that big, dumb blue orb about what's out there.
Well, and also, like, it's not like it's the only trip that will ever be around the moon. And it's because it's the cost of this. The cost is dramatically, once BFR happens, if it happens, it's going to be extremely inexpensive compared to what we've paid before. A trip around the moon is going to be the equivalent of like, hey, I'm going to throw, you know, a wild New Year's Eve party, you know, in Dubai or something. It's going to be the cost of that. It's going to be dramatically lower. So we will be able to send, you know, do chartered flights. And again, it's a chartered flight. This guy says this is what I'm paying for. We will be able to do flights and stuff with astronomers, with researchers, with people and equipment and doing all this sort of stuff. And who's to say, like, you know, when they send this around, I mean, they could build in there like amazing, you know, mapping systems and, you know, camera systems and things like this so we could get data. But if we don't, the idea is it's space is open. You know, now we get to go whenever we want. Not, you know, the Apollo era was $1 billion in 1960s money per person to send them there.
So, all right. And this is something that I'll let me ask you a question, Andrew, because I did not follow up on this report. So he has not announced who the artists are going to be. He just said that the artists that he wants to travel with artists.
Yeah, in what is the best ploy ever to get yourself invited to every cocktail party, every art event, everything in the world. It was like just was brilliant. You know, it's like now, you know, everybody's going to be your best friend.
Yeah. So
you knock on a door. Hey, it's me. Who are you? Banksy.
Yeah. If that's the case, then effectively what this means is, look, there's going to be the moment that this happens, and that's going to be a news story, and then everybody else that is on that flight will be releasing – the next thing they do will be its own mini news story. I mean, if we talk about – again, to get back to – I always harp on it, but like to get back to SpaceX was the idea of trying to live stream a greenhouse from Mars because he wanted people to think more about – the future and look, if we can make this technical thing possible, imagine what we can do going forward. This is the romanticism of space, but in a way that pop culture has never really seen before. And also, by the way, if you're looking at that caliber, there is one person that takes pictures with Elon Musk and is a fan of Elon Musk and Elon Musk has reciprocated his fandom of, like, imagine the Kanye album when he gets back from the moon. Like that's not, I would, if there's odds on it, I don't know about Kanye's interest in going around the moon, but like that would be an odds on favorite in my opinion.
I have deep respect for Kanye. Let me make that very clear. This man is a hard worker. He's an amazingly talented guy. I don't know if I were one of the artists, the idea of spending a week inside of a spacecraft.
That would be certainly somebody who, you know, his last album began with "Today I decided I'm going to kill you" about himself. I don't know if maybe that might disqualify Kanye from going around the moon. But that being said, look, there's this. I think is a tremendous opportunity for us to talk about in a way that will fascinate the world about space and to officially kind of begin this era of it's not weird that people go into space and do things.
So remember when we were talking about, I don't know if it was last week or months ago, but we were talking about the whole, there was some number of people who felt like it was inappropriate to launch a Tesla into space with a, you know, a spaceman slash possibly the dead body of somebody who crossed Elon Musk. In that same regard, I think there's value to this. I think SpaceX needs to figure out how to do this, and they need a payload. And if you're going to have a payload to figure out how to do this, then why not a bunch of artists? I think it's pretty great, to be honest.
And Elon Musk is very clear. They're like, oh, why did you choose him? And Elon's like, he chose us. He's the first one to come forward and pay. You know, he said, you know, this was MZ was the guy willing to pay to do this. And I think that SpaceX's kind of response, you know, it's funny because like the Tesla Roadster payload, as we talk, it gets criticism that's just sort of uninformed criticism of,
sure.
Nobody's complained about that. Was complaining about, you know, the last, you know, the first Delta test launch that used concrete or whatever. You know, it's like because they just didn't know to care. But here, because it's a chartered flight, because it's that, you know, SpaceX, I'm like, yeah, charter a flight is what we do. This is our business. We let you hire us to do what you want to do. You want to do scientific research, whatever. Guess what? We're an option. And I think we're going to see stuff like that because there are space agencies and organizations around the world that fund very expensive research projects. And I think that it would not surprise me if in the very near future we might find that, you know, Australia just launched their own, you know, space agency. You know, you have some other countries that all of a sudden somebody might say, hey, we want to get a bunch of our universities together and we'll do an international project, but we're the founders of it. And we want to send a bunch of researchers and equipment around and let's do that. You know, I think that as it gets closer to a reality, it's going to become a reality. You know, it takes a guy like MZ to say, hey, I'm going to put down, he already, you know, put down a substantial deposit. You know, this, who knows how much he put down, but you know, he already put down a ton of money, and that's the hard part for somebody to, you know, there are people kind of with a wait and see mentality.
Well, and that's, look, to me, there are two very significant things about this. Number one, that if this Japanese billionaire decided he was going to come to SpaceX and offer money so we could charter a flight, you have to have a SpaceX, like, which yeah. is kind of, I don't think that we should get too far away from that. If this is a thing that they are doing, that's really significant. That is. The commercialization in a meaningful way, not a press release, not a eventually 30 years down the road, we want to be space tourism. Like this is SpaceX exists within years, not decades. Somebody says, I want to put a tremendous amount of money. And even though this is not your business, I want to white label one of your BFRs so I can go around the moon. And I'm going to do what I want with it. And what I want is to bring artists along with me. That's amazing. I don't think that we should lose sight of the fact that exists is remarkable. Before we talk about, you know, whether or not it's the best use of it, you know, I think that's to me secondary.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of speculation about, you know, who could be on there and all that. And that's what come down to MZ. And, you know, when it comes to filmmakers, like, you know, I'd say James Cameron, but he's probably going to build his own spaceship. But, you know, Jonathan Nolan's good friends with Elon Musk and, you know, his brother Christopher's made a couple movies. So, but it's going to come down to MZ's choice. You know, it might be like, you know, Werner Herzog, you know,
in the vastness of space, we see nothing.
Which interesting, if you go back and you look at the, Bryce had a graph up that showed the timeline, like the flight plan. And if you look at it, when they do the lunar, like this thing, the whole thing's going to take like 5.5 days, you know, from launch to, you know, passing the moon. You're actually going to spend, because it's what's called a free return trajectory, which basically means you're just kind of going to go really fast, loop around the moon and basically fall back to Earth. Because you're not really going to enter the moon orbit. You're still in the orbit. You're still being attracted by the Earth because you're not going fast enough. It's only like 16 minutes that you're going to be passing over the moon.
Yeah, wow. It takes 2 days and 5 hours to begin the lunar flyby. The lunar flyby ends here at point 8 at day 3, hour 12. So that's a little over a day.
Mm-hmm.
That they're going around the backside.
In my mind, this whole trip looks like we took off. Holy crap, we're going to the moon next day. Holy crap, guys, can you believe we're still going to the moon next day? The moon,
hey,
we're almost to the moon, right? And then you go around the moon, you're like, that's the moon! And then you're heading over like,
hey guys, I got sandwiches, what'd I miss?
So two days of just
more days
like,
going back, huh?
Here we are in an RV, I don't know.
By the way, did I read this right? That also the entire trip will be streamed
In 4K VR?
VR?
It's Elon says.
I mean, ain't no reason you can't do that. That sounds cool.
That's going to be so dope. It's going to be so awesome. I am so excited to have a VR rig so I can watch, you know, just experience all that.
Yeah, it'll be I think that going how news cycles work and the way that sort of works now is that, you know, Elon Musk showed the engines. They have the engines they're using, the brand new engines that they're using, which are going to power this thing, the Raptor engines, which are incredibly powerful. They showed the first carbon fiber composite cylinder. And then we're going to get incremental developments of the BFR. Hopefully next year they want to do the first hop testing. They actually want to show this thing doing a hopping and landing. Then a couple years out, like 2022, and then we're going to get the buildup of that. Like there's going to be the hop tests of that, and then they're going to try to – I think they're going to try to go orbital in like 2020 with that. And then do the booster, and then 2022, that's still on the time frame for when they want to launch two BFRs to Mars unmanned and send those off to Mars and land. And then 2023 would be the lunar flyby. But also you're going to get MZ is going to have the reveals because, you know, the people he's going to bring with them, you know, they're going to want time to practice and train and get ready for what this mission is going to entail. So that's going to be an interesting sort of the reveal, the, you know, building up his Avengers team.
That's one of the things I wanted to chime in on is what's interesting to me is the fact that the person buying the trip to the moon is an artist and that he instantly announces that part of the story, like, a chunk of metal went around the moon. That's great. For SpaceX, great for humanity and so on. But this dude, it makes sense that he would be buying a story to tell that involves the selection and the assembly of the Avengers and the journey out there and the journey back. And then, and the echoes of this experience live in humanity's stories for decades to come afterwards. I mean, it seems super wonderful. I love it.
Yeah. So the whole thing is called Dear Moon Project. So hashtag Dear Moon. And if you want to follow the progress of that, you know, we'll be interested to see.
By the way, in the chat, somebody already calling it saying Lady Gaga, please. I'd back that. I mean, is there anybody Gaga going to the moon?
Yeah, she would be. Because she's a multi-talented person. She can make her own costumes, too. So, yeah, that's good.
she makes her own astronaut suit.
I mean, I will say, and I hadn't thought of this vector until Andrew very accurately pointed out that it's not just people whose art you respect. It's people that you are going to have to spend 5 days in a tube going through space with that, like, yes, impressive that MZ is spending this amount of money to go through the moon, possibly equally impressive, willfully spending 5 days with a bunch of artists that he may or may not know while going around the moon. Like, that's, there's going to be some stories from that experience. Because I can't imagine even the most well-adjusted artists on that level are particular people that are going to be under extraordinary stress.
What were the different archetypes that he said he wanted to bring with him? Because, like, in my mind, I'm thinking, like, if you had somebody who is a kinesthetic visionary, like Michael Motion, you know, essentially figuring out ways to juggle in space or whatever. So it says here, a painter, a musician, a film director, a fashion designer, some of the Earth's... okay, so it sounds like he's been a little bit mushy on the specific category of superhero everyone is.
Yeah, I don't think there's any too hard and fast rules to it.
I think great. The only thing missing from the list is three podcasters who talk about Bigfoot. Like, if that was in there, I'd be even more on this. Oh, my God. Yes, the OK Go guys. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
I would imagine also that you're probably leaning more towards solo acts, right? Like, you're trying to maximize the stuff there.
That,
well, I'll tell you what. maybe we could raise enough money that we could charter our own flight to the moon. The only way that we could do it is by you going to patreon.com/weirdthings.
Hold on for the video listeners who are watching live. Bryce just altered the page HTML so that it says a painter, musician, film director, podcaster.
This is the website. I loaded it up in my official internet certified web browser.
Definitely the actual real website and definitely unaltered. Okay.
Patreon.com/weirdthings is where you can support the show. Not only do you get the After Things podcast, which comes on after Weird Things, wherein we talk about all sorts of business stuff, but also you get to support this very unique and amazing science and space-focused podcast, Weird Things, on Patreon. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
So, gentlemen, I don't know if you heard this, but imagine you're living in a quiet town in England, eastern side. Late at night, you hear the sound of children singing.
Right? Number one, I'm there mentally, so there that I remember reading this story. So I'm gonna back up just a little bit and all just right. say like I'm there, but Justin's all the way there.
It's raining, it's pouring, you hear this late at night, and you're wandering around trying to figure where the sound comes from. You go through the neighborhood, nobody knows where it's coming from, nobody quite knows, but everybody hears it, hear it late at night, children singing.
And plus also, like, imagine what that sounds like. Like, this isn't a vague, it's not like you're hearing the ocean waves crashing and you're thinking, that almost sounds like children singing. Like, you know the song. This appears to be "It's Raining, It's Pouring, the Old Man is Snoring," and you all hear right. it. And then at some point, you reach out to other neighbors saying, "Hey, did you hear like a weird chorus of kids in the dead of night singing 'It's Raining, It's Pouring, the Old Man is Snoring'?"
You know, 100 years ago, a bunch of children died tragically. It could be that.
All right, hold on. All right, so how big is this town?
Small town, got an industrial section.
All right.
Yeah, let's, for sake of discussion, call it 3,000 people.
Okay. And this is in a built-up area or like the countryside?
Largely rural.
But a little of the buildings, there are buildings there.
So, all right. Well, if it were totally pastoral, I would be like, all right, well, now I'm kind of SOL. If it's some kind of buildings, and that means that there can be some sort of sound system that is doing something creepy. I mean, that's what I would suspect. It's somebody just being a creep and playing some creepy stuff late at night. You know, it's getting into the spooky season. You know, next thing you know, it's going to be a creaking door and an old woman cackling. Yeah. Like, it's just one of them Halloween records.
I mean, yeah. Hey, Justin, it's me, your neighbor. Here we are just out of Ipswich. Look, I understand that you think it's some kind of prankster, but, like, what kind of prankster would regularly, in the dead of night, start playing a chorus of children singing a song? Like, to what benefit? We all know that Halloween isn't for at least the other side of this year. Halloween happened last year. It's not going to happen again this year. What are you doing?
I mean, well, because it's very obviously creepy. So if they wanted to creep everybody, maybe it's one of them social experiment people where they want to see, you know, the foundations of our own sanity and how long it'll take before the entire town acknowledges what is very obviously happening.
Oh, I'm sorry. So you're saying that this is all part of a viral marketing stunt for a haunted house, which does not exist and has never come to this town before, that we're just going to keep playing, of all things, It's Raining, It's Pouring, the Old Man is Snoring, in a children's chorus that we're going to hear night after night after night at random intervals? Explain to me where's the profit motive on this?
So I was not thinking that there was a profit motive. I thought it was just for the lulz. But if somebody greenlit that idea, then good luck getting people into your haunted house.
I mean, but even for the lulz, I mean, that's a decent chunk of change. You gotta get a PV amp. You gotta have electricity and.
You get some speakers, you get an iPod, you hit the button, you know, that you can even automate it. You could set it as an alarm.
Hold on. Let's take a sidebar. No longer playing characters. Justin.
Yeah.
I'm having this thought. You know my obsession with Nextdoor.com. Is it worth figuring out a way to prank my neighborhood? With some, like, whatever this scheme is you have in your mind, like, is there a way, and is it worth us investing time, energy, and effort to just to see what pops up on Nextdoor?
Right. Remember when I asked whether or not this was an industrial or pastoral town? The reason why was because a prankster was more likely in an industrial area where, A, there's just more space and there's more enclosed area, but also it's a little bit more transient. You know, if you go work, it could be somebody who works at a factory that's decided to set something up and not somebody literally pooping where they eat. If you were to do it in your neighborhood, the only reveal beyond you just deciding that you wanted to watch maniacally people on Nextdoor.com saying, does anybody else hear the creepy children's chorus at 1 o'clock in the morning, literally every morning, is you saying, ha ha, it's me, the king of pranks, Brian Brushwood. At which point you immediately become the worst person in the neighborhood that everybody hates.
I mean, we already have that title, so really, what's he going to lose?
Okay, like, what if they... Okay, just hear me out, fellas. What if the voice hidden inside a speaker, powered by batteries, is wrapped in a shrub, and it once, you know, every other hour or whatever, just says the word weird, and then like we never go public with it. It's just this small town, this area outskirting Austin, is haunted by a ghost who, for some reason, says the word weird.
This is an awful idea, and this is bad for a million different reasons. I think it would work though. If you wanted to creep out your neighborhood by issuing or having everybody hear the same creepy thing at the same time every night or at different times, but in the dead of night, you could very easily creep the hell out of your neighborhood. Yes.
So I'll give you just an idea. So I got to hang out with the Mason Jonathan last night, who is notorious for the pranks he pulls on people. This is a guy that has like a full-size wolf sculpture thing that will drop down in front of a window as people walk by the house and they see a werewolf. I mean, all sorts of stuff he has rigged up. But he told me about one he does where, and he's at, you know, back there, you know, Vegas, people will be hanging out in the backyard and he'll be like, hey guys, just so you know, one of the tigers from Siegfried and Roy's show escaped. Police are on the lookout. It's on the news, but one of the tigers is out there. Okay. And they're like, and people are like, okay. And he lets it linger and people
this
forget
is the,
about
the,
it.
The casual priming that he does to
yeah,
set
he's
up
very
the
good.
Bit.
He got lays it down there. You know, he's got, you know, very, he's very good at setting that stuff up. He's got a great story about Coolio and a, fake snake, but anyhow, he lays that out there. People kind of forget about it. And then he takes a rolled up tube. And then what he'll do is he'll walk up behind somebody later that night, you know, and then go in their ear, put the tube up in the ear and go, do this roar, this, you know, tiger type growl. And people go, ah! So he describes this. He says this. And then we're sitting there talking to Christopher Hart, you know, the magician. And then, I don't know, about 15, 20 minutes later, Jonathan gets up, disappears. And I see him sneak up behind Chris.
And you know exactly what's coming next.
And Chris goes, ah, Chris. Like little LA, no tigers around there.
Andrew, I gotta admit, you're not doing much to dissuade me from this idea of gaslighting my whole neighborhood.
I would say you would be
the first person they would guess, right?
I mean, last time they got upset, it was because they thought a deranged homeless person was screaming out in the Greenbelt, and it turned out that it was me dressed as a deranged homeless person screaming because we were shooting some stuff for Game On. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, Brad, I don't see anything that could go wrong. We used to have in Florida, remember the Outhouse Bandit?
The Outhouse Bandit? That sounds familiar, but I don't remember.
That was like every Halloween was like this guy would drop off a full outhouse in the middle of like the courthouse square or something like this.
He would deposit? Do you call it a bandit when their job is to deposit structures in places?
I think it was, let me call it that. Let me try to remember.
The Outhouse Bandit. He stole the free 2x2 space that used to be here and replaced it with an outhouse.
Outhouse gang. That was Outhouse Gang. So they've been doing this for like 80 years. This thing that's been going on where they like would prank by like dropping off an outhouse or something like in front of City Hall or something like this. It's been like just a long-standing thing. This is from 2000. The Outhouse Gang got out of their Halloween shenanigans again. For the 82nd year in a row, the masked crew, known for their Potterland acts, eluded Hollandale Beach Police Department in its best efforts. Since 1929, the crew has left an outhouse covered with political and other messages outside of the city post office. 1 year it was modest, another was a two-tiered condo-esque concoction, regardless it targets a host of political figures while providing commentary on our current events.
So they leave it to be disassembled and taken away by the police?
Well, they leave it where it will, yeah, I mean, it gets mixed into the news, everybody talks about this, and then, you know, it's been a long-running thing that's been going on forever, you know, like this, nobody knows who it is, you know?
Well, all right, hold on, wait a minute. So what happened with this? It's raining and snoring, the old man, or
the answer is, Justin, we're working on it. You got to give us a little bit of time. We only just now hatched this scheme.
I think we have a clip of it that we can listen to very briefly here. Let's see.
The old man is snoring. He went to bed and
That's fairly unambiguous, Justin. How does that alter things for you?
Oh, no, I mean, it is very sufficiently creepy. I don't think that that's up for any kind of debate. I didn't think it was anything other than somebody playing audio. But, oh, my God.
Here's where it goes. Finally, they trace this. They realize it's coming from an industrial building, right? Like, oh, an industrial building. There's a building. We've located where this is. Clearly, it's the PA system or something like this. Well, they talk to the owners. Like, hey, listen, we're hearing creepy children's music late at night. And they're like, huh, well, that shouldn't be happening. Like, what do you mean it shouldn't be happening? Like, no, like, well... Yeah, we have an alarm system that uses that, but it's only triggered by motion. If something is moving inside of our building, then we would get the music. So it went from creepy to kind of even more creepy in a way. Like, yeah, there's nobody here at night. There's no way.
Okay, separate. Pause. Side jag. Who says, hey, is this 1-800 security systems? I need a security system. It was like, yeah, this is 1-800 security systems. Well, what do you want? It was like, well, I mean, I want to be able to know when people are there. It's like, okay, well, we've got Klaxon, we've got Zaxxon, we've got Jackson, where we play Janet Jackson music. Like, what sounds would you like to indicate that an intruder is in your house? And then somebody at some point has to say, I would like the sound of children singing, it's raining, it's pouring, to be the alarm.
I think it's more of a deterrent to scare people away. And I think that they're having a meeting like, guys, we don't have a lot of money to spend on a system. And somebody's like, it's England. Like, why don't we hire a ghost? And they're like, you can't hire a ghost, you know, like you can't, you're like, oh, well, What, because you can't pay them? Listen, you know, Boris, we can do whatever we want, all right? And so, you know, like, we'll lure a ghost. And then somebody's like, well, why don't we just make it sound like there's a ghost in the PA? And they're like, oh, okay, all right. Shall we hire a ghost? Shall we find a ghost? This is England. We should have no trouble finding.
I just now put together that the idea of needing a security system and thinking, well, let's just lure a ghost in is almost – Like note for note, the ridiculous nature of SpaceX, where it's like, what I want is a live stream of a plant on Mars. So what say we just make a rocket company to make that happen?
I would like to do a thing that they also investigated whether or not they could just bring enchanted suits of armor to life, like Bedknob and Broomsticks.
Oh, wait. I have a brilliant idea, and this is a side jag. I apologize. You can't pay a ghost. Who says you can't in the age of cryptocurrencies? Ghost coin.
Ghost
it's
coin.
It's good for when you die.
Yeah. Who oh said you can't take it with you? You yep. can with ghost coin.
Ghost coin.
By the way, Brian Brushwood now selling ghost coin insurance. Give me dumb human dollars now, and I'll cover all your expenses in the ghost realm for only one... amount of monies. I'll super duper make sure that you're rich in the afterlife.
So now they say that this is a alarm and should only be triggered when people are in motion. There so this yep. is them saying that, like, all right, let's say some old, you know, skullduggery's going down in whatever factory that they're trying to protect, that their way of doing it, instead of it being a loud blaring noise that would signal the police, they're like, we don't need that. We'll creep them out. We'll have them running out when they believe that they have summoned some kind of creepy child ghost.
Basically. So now they're trying to figure out what's triggering this sound, right? And so I'm going to not quite know the full details of how this discovery of this investigation took place, but we'll fill them in ourselves, as is our objective scientific procedure we do here on Weird Things. Like, all right, do you have any security cam footage? Like, yes. Like, all right, let's go back to 2:13 a.m. when the ghostly sound started to go. And you're seeing these sort of surveillance footage from around the building, kind of like Five Nights at Freddy's, you know, like this empty corridor, empty corridor, empty corridor. And like, okay, now it's starting to play in here. It's raining, it's pouring. We don't see anything. Like, there's nobody there. Like,
oh, my God. Oh, hold on. All of a sudden, I'm having this, like, magician dual reality thing. It's like, what you do is a separate group of people trains a bunch of kids to be afraid, thinking, like, if you go to the haunted place and sing Raining, It's Pouring, the ghosts will sing along with you. So you get this endless parade of kids trembling and afraid showing up, starting seeing Raining, It's Pouring, and then suddenly the ghosts join them.
That's one track for investigating it.
I could smell your disapproval. That's fine.
No,
that's fine.
I'm thinking, and then, like, the kids get trapped in an elevator or something.
And then they work out their differences.
No, then they die, Brian.
Oh, yeah, that works.
And now it's two battling choruses, but the other kids want to sing an entirely different song.
It's a ghost battle. You got served, other ghosts.
Yeah, like, what if, like, two ghosts that don't like each other decide to haunt a house?
I mean, I think I saw that sitcom in the 80s, 70s, but it's a great story.
My Two Dead Dads.
Exactly. No, it's halfway to Death Becomes Her.
Yeah. So anyhow, they're looking at the surveillance footage. They're looking for something. Like, is there somebody in the house? Is there somebody? Like, no, nothing. Like, all right, what's going on? And they're like, well, let's go look at the camera that's right next to the motion sensor, because it is motion sensor triggered, right? And they're watching, and they're the next night. They're there live. They're in the little room. They're in the little room in the middle of the industrial area, and it's very quiet. Sorry.
Snakes. I call snakes.
No snakes, Brian. It's very quiet, and they're watching. Waiting, because, you know, it doesn't happen at the same time, but kind of late at night, and they're looking at the camera, getting in close, because it's been a couple hours. They've expected it to happen already. Then all of a sudden, it's a flicker, something by the camera, just a flicker, something that just looks like it just moved by fast. And they hear, it's raining, it's pouring, it's raining. And now we decide, all right, we've got to go run out and go into the corridor to see what this is. Who's with me? Grab your torches, gentlemen.
I mean, I'm totally with you. Also, gonna log my bet right now. Moth. It may in fact be a moth. That's where I'm at right now.
A moth every night. A regular moth every night.
I mean,
that's what your plan is.
No, and
an aurora borealis located entirely in your kitchen.
Steamed hams only. It's a moth triggering children singing in an industrial complex.
So we run down the corridor. We got our flashlights. We run down to the spot where it's coming from. As we're running down and we're hearing, it's raining. It's echoing through there too. It's raining, it's pouring, and we're getting to the source of it. You know, our flashlights, our torches, whatever you want to call it. We're starting to tremble as our hands. We get to the corridor where it happened. We flash our lights all around looking for somebody. Oh, did I feel? Oh, no, that's Brian right by my shoulder. It's Justin over my other shoulder. Oh, okay, all right. Tell me to tap me on the back, but it's nobody's there. It's just my nerves. And we look up. We aim the light up at the motion sensor. And there we see it, Justin, looking at us, staring at us. In the background, we hear, it's raining, it's pouring. We find out what's been triggering the motion sensor.
What's your guess, bro?
I think it's a cat.
No. Spiders, Justin. It's spiders. It's not snakes. It's spiders.
Look, there's only two natural occurring characters on this podcast. Okay, and we already eliminated snakes.
So number one, this is for real. This really happened.
Yes. Yeah.
So
I mean, for real as a British newspaper can be.
There is a factory for which has decided that the most effective alarm sound is this song and have it connected to with no manual override. No, like it just immediately starts playing as so loud that the entire town can hear it. It's raining, it's pouring, the old man is snoring. That's what you would have me believe.
I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility. If you were here in this house right now and I casually mentioned like, hey, I got to drop the kid off for her Pilates, will you please select a sound for the alarm to make? That seems like the kind of thing you might pick from a menu.
Also, don't alarms normally go to the cops? Like, aren't like why would the cops not be called?
They won't show up. They won't show up.
Here we go. A spokesman from the site said, the sound is only supposed to act as a deterrent for opportunistic thieves that come onto our property, and it's not designed to be, or it's designed only to be heard by people on our private land. I mean, if I were somebody who was looking to strip out copper tubing or copper wiring to sell, that seems like that would get me to off.
I'm not saying it's not effective that if somebody, you know, thieves in general, that time of night might not exactly be, MI6 level precision. You know, maybe there's a little under the influence. Maybe you're a little susceptible to spooky thoughts.
Why dress up as a bat to fight crime?
Yeah, because it's what I'm afraid of. And it's important that what I'm afraid of is the way I look to everyone. Let me sing a song for you. It's called Just Imagine It's Raining as I sing this. Here we go.
Wow. I thought that you had given it away that it was like a promo for some haunted house or something. I had no idea that this was an actual thing.
Super totally rando accidental.
I mean, we're getting close to that time, by the way, though, where we will start seeing all the BS stuff like this haunted high school, da 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 da. Meanwhile, they're having a Halloween, you know, haunted house that's available. And it's like, you're going to start seeing that, you know, and that's become the new predictable thing is you do some bogus stunt, viral stunt. And then, by the way, did we mention we're going to be doing a haunted house? Who knows if the ghosts will show up?
Yeah.
I love the idea that like, hey, we think we may have opened up a portal to hell. By the way, you can get discounts on tickets right now.
Yeah, exactly. Our hell portal is open for the season, and pre-buy your apple cider.
Yeah. Well. We want to go to picks?
Heck yes.
I got a pick. Brian suggested it to me, and we've been burning through it here. The Good Place. Starring Kristen Bell and Ted Danson. It's kind of fascinating in that the premise here is that Kristen Bell dies and goes to the afterlife, and Ted Danson is an architect of that afterlife. But it's kind of interesting to see where kind of comedies have gone. And Michael Schur, with a pedigree in writing on The Office and creating Parks and Recreation, this is very much a serialized comedy. Like, things build, and there is mythology that is paid attention to. So beyond the idea that it's a rare comedy wherein it's kind of by definition a workplace comedy or a day in the life kind of comedy, but it is in a world where literally anything can happen, but also that you can't just, you know, it's not like The Office or Parks and Recreations where you just know that, all right, well, here's the wacky thing that happens to our characters in this season or in this episode, and maybe there's big through lines through it. This is very much like episode by episode is evolving and changing the very nature of the show. So very well done. The comedy is really funny. I'm in the beginnings of season two, and I think it's kind of had a little bit, I think it's kind of catching up with itself in terms of some of the narrative challenges that it is, that it is set up, but I'm looking forward to seeing where they resolve.
If it makes you feel better by the end of season two,
if it makes me feel better, I would prefer that you have no commentary on season two at all.
It's a good season.
I remember when it ended, people talking about how amazing it was. So I'm looking forward to it being amazing. At this point, I know that it took them three episodes to basically get to the point where now we're at a solid narrative direction. So I'm looking forward to it.
Right on. So I just started the book, The Nice Switch. It's too early for me to really even chime in on how good it is. But I do think it's interesting to talk or to listen to nonfiction stuff about what is the best way to communicate effectively to other people. Sorry, not The Nice Switch, The Like Switch. That's what it is.
There we go.
By Jack Schaefer. That's what it is. It's an ex-FBI's agent's guide to influencing, attracting, and winning people over.
Very cool. And so you just started this?
Just started it. Nice. I will report.
I just finished this morning what was a 10-day rewatch of Breaking Bad.
Holy cow.
Man, this show's so good.
Wait a minute. In 10 days, you watched all of it?
Hell yeah.
You're a crazy person.
But this was like my go-to show, and I've seen it. This is probably my third or fourth rewatch of it. So it's not like I, you know, was paying attention the whole time. I'm sure I slept through more than one episode. But it was, I think it was sometime last week or maybe before, Brian. But you had reminded me that someone had made a cut of Breaking Bad, like a
right,
short
cut. As a movie, a 2.5-hour movie. Basically, what's his name? Jesse, almost virtually absent from it.
Yeah. And I still have not seen that cut, but it was an interesting thing to be reminded of going back into watching Breaking Bad and knowing, you know, the behind the scenes story that, oh, yeah, they wanted to kill off Aaron Paul's character, Jesse, after the first season.
But he was just too good.
He's very good. He's very likable. And he really is like the good person to Walter White's sort of evil person. It's a great like high drama show. And it does a good job of like portraying not an anti-hero, but a legitimate bad guy, like a supervillain. Like Walter White looks like a supervillain with the goatee and the bald head and the, you know, distributing hundreds of thousands of pounds of methamphetamine to the Southwest United States.
And the murdering.
And the murders. Sure. Yeah. I mean, whatever.
And also the lying that we just keep on going.
The murdering, yeah. And the lying and the...
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Like, the show initially turned me off when I tried to watch the first episode because to me, it was very clear he was a bad guy. Not because, oh, because of what he did, but his reasoning, his rationale for what he did. And when I tried to watch it the first time, I'm like, no, he doesn't buy this motivation for this. So I'm like, this is a bad, because I'll be like, oh, it's great. This guy who has, people describe like, this guy has to do this and all this. And I'm like, no, that's not what's, and it, probably the writer in me was picking up on like, yeah. No, we're given an excuse that seems like a likely excuse for him to do this. And it seemed to me like, this seems like sort of flimsy justification for doing it. And then I went back and watched it again, and then I listened to like an interview with Vince Gilligan, and where he's talking about like no, he's bad. He's clearly bad. And I'm like, oh, good. You guys are ahead of me. You really are ahead of me in your writing. You really are planning like I'm going to introduce a villain, but people aren't going to realize he's a bad guy from the beginning. They're going to think he's just this. And then as you get into it, you're like, he's a deeply rooted, hateful guy.
And like that's what I have heard from a lot of people who have never finished or only like just started watching and stopped was like, oh, I don't really like this Walt guy. He seems like a bad dude, whatever. But I think it might have been a similar quote from you, Andrew, but yeah, Vince Gilligan was out there saying like, yeah, I wanted to write a story about a good person who becomes bad, not is an anti-hero, not a renegade, but is willfully being the bad guy in the story.
So you might know what's funny about that show. And when you look at the reaction to his wife, to Skyler in the show,
which I think is unfounded. I think she is a very realized character.
Oh no, I think it to me is not only the red herring for people who view Breaking Bad in the way that Andrew was talking about, that like, oh no, Breaking Bad, sure, he breaks some laws and maybe he has to make some bad moral decisions, but what is he supposed to do? And after all, like, he can't find any joy with his harpy wife always yelling at him and ruining the fun of what we're enjoying, you know, in front of us. When it's like, really, to me, by the end of that show, what you realize is even when she's hectoring of him and even when she is kind of pecking at him, you have to wonder what we come into his story at a very specific point. And you have to wonder how much somebody that is married to him realizes, like, no, he's prone to making very bad decisions. And we don't know, we never find out what really went down with him and his old, you know,
his old flame and her boyfriend and all that stuff. Yeah.
Like that there's like, by the end of it, you're left to think, like, no, she's been. Like there's us as the viewer. It's always like whenever there's like a show, for whatever reason, Dollhouse to me, it always stands out as the example of this, that like there, you are building an incorrect foundation to a show when your protagonists are actively trying to shut down the reason why it's an interesting show, you know?
In the chat, Codes From Home is asking if buying a beige Aztec was one of those fundamentally poor decisions that he made in the past.
Stubbornness.
Probably, yeah. But like there's this moment in Breaking Bad where on one level you're like, no, like it's a cool show because he's this like, you know, slip sliding into awful meth dealer supervillain. Mm-hmm. And Skyler just keeps wanting to ruin the fun and keep him on the straight and narrow. But I think that that's kind of... She, at the end of it, in a show full of some realistic, some cartoonish kind of characters, I think was maybe for me by the end of it, the like the fact that we keep pulling further and further away from her in now fully realized, you realize, oh no, she was the lighthouse to decency.
And she was like the most principled one.
Yeah, the fact that we keep moving further.
Well, and by the way, that's one of the greatest moments, spoiler alert, in the series, is when it comes to that big reveal moment, she's like, yeah, no, I get it, dummy. I can tell.
Obviously, you've been lying to me. You're not a good liar.
Yeah, correct. And I guess you're selling, you know, I mean, it's the fact that they grant her at that important moment when we are primed after 50 years of television to expect this to be a big deal reveal. And instead she's like, yes, no, I get it, dummy, whatever. Like, that was great. It's a fantastic show.
And it's like the other like really great recurring sort of theme of the show is like ingenuity and interesting technical expertise and making that seem interesting, right? Like the idea of like the method of cooking meth and going into, you know, this kind of fakey sciencey stuff about it, but then making the steps of that process feel interesting and the train heist, which is a really incredible scene,
the one with Jesse Plemons in there.
Yeah. You know, from like really strong visual storytelling to finding ways to make pretty much every moment of that series captivating, incredibly strong. If you haven't, or if you stopped watching Breaking Bad or whatever, you really should give it a full go.
I'm going to catch up. I got into like, I think I'm like two seasons behind, you know, the end. I, you know, really dug it. That whole point that Justin brought up to you about when you watch crime shows and you're kind of rooting for it, no, don't stop it. You know, we almost make the good guys out to be bad guys because they're the ones going to stop the fun. I kind of watched an American Made, you know, the Doug Liman, Tom Cruise film about Barry Seal, which sort of had that element to it too. And it's also the problem now with crime films is like there's a template, you know, like, hey, I'm kind of a normal person, maybe a little on the edge. And then I get into this thing and then I get deeper and then I have these close calls and it's scary. And then I'm either in jail, in hiding, you know, or dead, you know,
yeah,
kind of thing. But that was sort of like that element there of like, hey, you're rooting for a drug smuggler because, you know, you don't want him to get caught because it's the, you know, it's the game of it. And that's what, you know, it's going on in Ozark right now. So I'm like maybe four episodes into Ozark, which I think it's a great show. You know,
season but also, one or two.
Two. Yeah, two. And that's, you know, the challenge that show is going to face is going to be that is it, you know, the hey, everything's good. Oh. This new escalation of this new threat we came through here, and then that and the back and forth, that which can be interesting, but it's also
it has to get bigger and bigger and overlap and like well, solve and everything multiple times.
With Ozark, the challenge there, and keep in mind, I've only watched the first two or three episodes of season two, mm-hmm. but you know, it seems like what they're playing at is very similar to what I enjoyed most about The Shield, and The Shield had the benefit of having to be able to put on the chameleon skin of acting like a weekly police procedural. And so as a result, when things weren't about the core narrative, it didn't really, you know, trigger anything in your mind. Whereas Ozark is very much about the core narrative. And it's like, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if they can get quite as many miles out of Ozark as they were able to get out of The Shield.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're setting it up. I mean, there's. I don't want to get too much into, like, I don't know what happened, the outcome of season two is, but things they're trying to put in place for season two, it's if they happen, then great, then we're going to have a different challenge base to deal with in a season three and whatnot. So, you know, be interesting. So,
yeah, I do think also tone, that's, you know, to just bring it back to Breaking Bad, part of what I think is so special about that show is that it adjusts its tone in a way that by the time that, you know, you get a climactic scene that ends in a literal like Looney Tunes Tex Avery kind of moment
shootout, yeah,
you're like oh wow, I guess I was watching that show. I guess like all along, like the characters felt so real, the tension felt so real, but we're so far away from a kind of scummy teacher deciding that he wants to become a meth cooker, which is like an outsized yet very real sort of moment, and all these real touchstones that we get to this like, oh no, it's an international conspiracy and there's all these like colorful villains and they, you know, they have all these like crazy things. It's that was a show that always dared itself to say, all right, well, he got out of the craziest thing ever. Now, how does he get out of the next craziest thing? It always 2X'd every problem that it faced, which was, you know, I think maybe if you're going to ding it at all, it might have hit a wall by the final season.
Let's talk about the Norm Macdonald theory that Vince Gilligan will never admit in public.
I don't know the Norm Macdonald theory, but I don't want to ruin it for
okay,
Andrew.
All right,
yeah. And, yeah.
All right.
If you're familiar, check out the Norm Macdonald theory.
Yeah. So I guess the Ozark season two, check that out. And then I've had the iPhone XS Max for a few days.
Ooh. How do you like the Max?
I'm weak, so it's heavy. You know, it's a large, you know, I'm basically, you know, holding half a laptop in my hand. And I remember we joked when the first time, you know, Apple joined the phablet, you know, craze and followed lead, you know, everybody else was doing on those. We joked like, oh, it's an iPad mini. It really feels like an iPad mini in a good way. I found so far typing on it a lot easier.
So yeah, this is one of those weird moments for me because normally I've always been a every generation buy a new iPhone thing, but and I liked my a plus when I had it. Mm-hmm. Six or seven plus.
Seven hard plus, for me to I think, remember. Is what you had. Yeah.
But this is the first year that I'm so happy with my mm-hmm. iPhone 10 that sure. I didn't jump on the new generation.
Yeah.
I mean, I skipped like the 7 Plus or something because there was like 1 year I go like, man, this is just incrementally not enough for me because they had, you know, it had that already, the 7 had the fingerprint sensor and the 7 Plus like ours is faster or whatever. And so like that wasn't enough. And then when I went to the 10, I was thrilled with the 10. I thought the 10, I really liked that. It's funny. Everybody made fun of the notch. Now every phone has a notch now. I've been very happy that so far. I like the speed. I mean, it's fast. I mean, how fast things that should move slower, how fast it goes. But I think it's like if you're happy with your phone, you're happy with your phone, you know. And there's something for everybody out there, you know. They're great Android phones now, you know.
Oh, yeah. Totally. I did not update. The price kind of scared me off for the Max because I really didn't. I like my form factor enough that I was going to stay with the 10, but I did want the Max because I do miss the larger form factor of the Plus. But price scared me off a little bit, and I'll just wait for the next one, and it'll be super awesome. And because the 10 for me has been a delight.
I have the Apple program, the upgrade program.
Oh yeah, how was getting that? Because that seemed like a pretty easy process.
Yeah. Oh, it's super easy because like you know, the day before you can go online, pre-fill everything out. Then the night of when at midnight, you can just click buy. And then So what that is, it's like they have different, you know, different tiers. So you pay like a monthly installment, you know, depending on which phone you got. And then you get a new phone every year. So but you return your previous one or you can keep it and not get the new one.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy it out. So basically it's like a revolving loan. So, you know,
basically it takes out the anxiety of that yearly cycle and instead just makes it, you know, whatever, that's my monthly thing.
Yeah. Starting at like $40 a month, you know, you can do this. So I of course got the stupid bit maxed out phone, but like, you know, $40-$50 a month, whatever, you know, and then, you know, you pay your phone, you know, $600 a year phone tax, and then, you know, you get a new phone every year. So I just do that.
Yeah, I have a similar program with T-Mobile where we can get a new phone every 6 months or something, and you know, it makes sense in that scheme for me to at least get the new phone every year since I'm going to be paying pretty much the same amount for it. I ended up getting the 10S, and I did not have the 10 last year, but the Face ID stuff is magical. Like, and now they have the integration with they have better integration with your password managers. So I instead of restoring from my old phone's, you know, image, I downloaded all my apps again and logged in again with everything, and it was really fast to be able to just do the Face ID stuff to log in a lot of places where you didn't used to be able to access password managers. So it's cool just the fact that I can look at it and the little lock comes undone. And it's a cool phone.
That's great stuff. I mean, it just a lot of cool things on every platform, and you know, and you're at the point now too, like I love the camera on iPhone, but like, you know, I think it's like the Pixel or whatever people say that on the Android has a better camera, and I like that. It's kind of we're at this point where there's really good competition between the black platforms to come out with sort of the best sort of thing, you know, in areas where they can. I mean, it's hard. Android's at a disadvantage right now with speed because they can't build the dedicated silicon like Apple can. But I think in other areas, you know, they're doing really good stuff too. So,
yeah.
You know.
And a lot of their camera stuff is because they can put more computational power into processing images. And so you get images that look pretty nice. I don't know. I haven't spent too much time with the phone on this because I like using the little portrait lens on here, and the depth slider where you can make it look more out of focus after the fact is really cool.
There's an, maybe I'll show this next week. There's a really cool thing there with the depth camera where you can actually see because of the front, the camera on the front facing camera, mm-hmm. it has, you know, it uses like basically the Microsoft Kinect technology and puts the point cloud over your face.
Yeah,
there's an app, and I forgot to save it on here, that's like a developer app, whereas you look at your face on there, you swivel your face around, and all of a sudden you're looking at the side of your face.
Whoa.
Oh, so it stores the depth data and rotates.
Real time makes a 3D map of your face.
Oh, real time. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So, man, I should have saved that on here. So yeah, that's just kind of amazing. So, and that's you know, future of phones. So, cool. All right, gentlemen. It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.